commanded that if I was to return, I had to take the magic of the stolen book into myself to keep it from the rest of the world of life.
What?
Colin breathed, wide-eyed.
You don't mean...
I have the plague. She gripped his shoulder with one hand and felt his forehead with the other. He was burning with fever.
Richard, why didn't you tell me before?
He smiled through the pain. Forgiveness was all I needed, all I wanted, but I had to know it was true and not grant it out of pity.
Richard, you can't die. Not now. Dear spirits, you can't die.
The dear spirits had nothing to do with this. It was Dark and Rawl who chose Drefn to be your husband as the price of the path into the winds, and Dark and Rawl who demanded this as the price of my return.
Your return? Don't tell me that you only came back to die. Oh, Richard, why would you do such a foolish thing?
If I had stayed at the Temple of the Winds, I would eventually have died, but without your forgiveness. I chose instead to return and hope that a part of you still loved me enough to forgive me, so I could die with that much at least, with your love back. I couldn't go on, knowing what I had done to you, knowing how I had hurt your heart.
And you don't think this hurts my heart? Richard, there has to be something we can do. What can we do? Please, you must have known.
Richard fell onto his side, holding his stomach.
I'm sorry, Callan. There is nothing. I am absorbing the magic from the book that was stolen. When I die, the magic will die with me.
Colin crouched over him, clutching at him as the tears overwhelmed her.
Richard, please don't do this. Please don't die.
I'm sorry, Colin. I can't stop it. I gladly paid the price. My heart is at peace now.
He reached up and touched the Aegeal hanging from the chain at her throat.
There was never a moment's hesitation once I understood. Denna helped me to understand.
Colin hugged him as he rolled onto his back.
Richard, there must be something. You would have known what to do before they took the knowledge from you. Try to remember. Please, Richard, try to remember.
His eyelids drooped.
I need to rest. I'm sorry. I used all my strength. I need to rest a bit.
Colin gripped his hand in both of hers as she wept. It was all too overwhelming to endure. To have him back only to lose him was too crushing to endure. She opened his limp hand to press it to her cheek and saw something in his palm. She pulled back his fingers, and through the tears she saw writing in the palm of his hand. It said, "Find book. Destroy it to live." Colin sprawled over his unconscious form and grabbed his other hand. It, too, had writing in it. Pinch of white sorcerer's sand on third page. One grain of black sorcerer's sand tossed on. There were three other words, but in her mind's state of chaotic disorder, she couldn't think of how to pronounce them. He knew he was going to forget, and before he did, he wrote a message to himself. He had even forgotten that he had written it.
The book. She had to have the book.
And then she was running, screaming as she went.
Kara! Verdeen! Help me! Kara! Verdeen!
Both women dashed out of the Slif's room, out onto the walkway beside the inky pool, when they heard Colin screaming their names as she raced into the tower room. Colin grasped at their leather as she tried to explain. They each seized one of Colin's arms and pressed her up against the wall.
Slow down, Verdeen said. We can't understand you, Kara said. Get your breath. Stop crying and get your breath. Richard!
She tried to point, but they held her arms.
Richard, has the plague. I need the book.
Verdeen leaned in close.
Lord Rawl, has the plague?
Colin nodded frantically.
I have to get the book. The book that was stolen from the Temple of the Winds. I have to get it, or he will die.
Colin tore her arms away from them.
Please, help me. Richard has the plague.
What do you need us to do? Kara asked.
I'm going to the old world. Protect him.
The old world?
Verdeen gasped.
Do you know where the book is? Did he tell you where to find it? Did he give you any hint?
Colin shook her head. There wasn't time. She had to hurry. She had to go.
I don't know where it is, but it's the only chance he has. He took on the magic of the plague in order to return to this world, in order to beg my forgiveness. He wanted to tell me he was sorry for hurting me. If we don't destroy the book, he'll die. Just so he could say he was sorry, he'll die. I have to go.
But Mother Confessor, Berdine said,
the old world is a big place. If Richard has the plague, how can you hope to find the book?
In time. That was what she meant. How could she hope to find the book in time, before Richard died? Colin gripped a fistful of red leather.
I have to try. Protect Richard. Don't let Drefin know that Richard is back. I don't know what Drefin would do. Don't tell him.
Kara was shaking her head. Don't worry about that. We won't tell Drefin. We'll take care of Richard while you're gone. We'll hide him here in the keep. But hurry. If you can't find it, please come back before...
Colin rushed into the room with the Slif. She raced to the Slif's well. The Slif smiled at seeing her.
Do you wish...
Travel! I need to travel, now!
To where do you wish to travel?
The old world.
Where in the old world? There are a number of places I know there. We can go to any you wish. I will take you. You will be pleased.
Colin pressed her hands to her head, growling in frustration as the Slif started naming places Colin had never heard of.
The place you came to with Richard, with your master, when he went to get me, the first time I traveled with you.
I know the place of which you speak.
Colin hiked up her white dress and clambered up onto the wall of the well.
That place! Take me there! Hurry, your master's life is at stake! Protect Richard!
Colin called out to Kara and Berdine.
What should we tell Drefin when he wants to know where you are?
Berdine asked.
I don't know. You'll have to think of something. We will care for Richard until you return,
Kara said.
May the good spirits be with you. Tell him I love him. Tell him I love him!
She called out as the Slif's silver arm swept Colin from the top of the wall. Her voice was still echoing off the stone walls when Colin was plunged into the quicksilver froth. She gasped in the Slif, praying to the good spirits that they would help her find the book. With frantic effort, she swam into what in the past had been the silver rapture. Now, there was only dark terror. Chapter 65. Anne leaned toward him.
This is your fault, you know.
Zed, sitting on the floor in the center of the room with her, glanced over.
You broke her prized mirror.
That was an accident, Anne insisted. You are the one who ruined their shrine.
I was simply trying to get it clean. How was I to know that it would catch fire? They shouldn't have put all those dried flowers around it. You were the one who spilled that berry wine on her best dress.
Anne turned her nose up.
The pitcher was too full. You're the one who filled it. Besides, you broke his prized knife handle. He won't ever be able to find a burled wasson root like that one again. He was understandably upset.
Zed harumphed.
What do I know about sharpening knives? I'm a wizard, not a blacksmith.
That would explain the incident with the elder's horse.
They can't blame that on me. I didn't leave the gate open. At least, I'm pretty sure I didn't leave it open. Anyway, there is bound to be another horse that fast he can buy. He can afford it. What I want to know is how you managed to turn his number 3 wife's hair that color green.
Anne folded her arms.
Well, it was an accident. I thought those herbs would make her hair smell good. I wanted to surprise her. But the elder's prized rabbit-skin headdress, that was no accident. That was plain laziness. You should have checked it sooner instead of leaving it to dry unattended over the fire. That headdress was a work of art, what with those thousands of beads. He won't easily replace such a nice headdress.
Zed shrugged.
Well, we never told them we were any good at domestic tasks. We never told them that at all.
Quite right. We didn't. It's not our fault if we didn't work out. We could have told them if they'd asked.
We certainly could have.
Anne cleared her throat into the silence.
What do you think they are going to do with us?
Both of them were sitting back to back, bound together with a coarse rope, while the meeting across the room dragged on. They still wore the wristbands that kept them from using their magic. Zed glanced across the room, where a heated discussion was being conducted. The bareheaded elder, his number one wife, several influential members of the Sidok community who had claimed rights to use the services of the captives, and the Sidok shaman were all complaining to one another about troubles they had had. Zed couldn't understand all of the words, but he could understand enough to follow the deliberations.
"They've decided they want to cut their losses and rid themselves of their domestic slaves," Zed whispered to Anne.
"What's happening?"
Anne asked, when the chattering finally came to an end.
"What have they decided? Are they going to set us free?"
The eyes across the room all turned to the captives. Zed made a warning sound to Anne.
"I think maybe we should have been a little more attentive to our chores,"
Zed whispered over his shoulder.
"I think we're in a great deal of trouble."
"Why, what are they going to do?"
Anne mocked.
"Return us to the Nang Tong and demand their blankets back?"
Zed shook his head as the Sidok rose up. The shaman's necklaces jangled together. The elder thumped his staff.
"I wish they would. They want to get back all their costs and something toward the damages. They are going to take us on a journey. They have just decided that they can get the best price for us by selling us to cannibals."
Anne's head swung around.
"Cannibals?"
"That's what they said. Cannibals."
"Zed, you were able to take the collar off your neck. Can't you get these confounded bracelets off our wrists? I think that now would be the time."
"I'm afraid we may end up in a cookpot with them still on us."
Zed watched an angry elder and a seething shaman stalking toward them.
"Well, it's been fun, Anne, but I'm afraid the fun is over."
Verna put an arm around Warren's waist, trying to help him as he stumbled along, as she followed behind Clarissa, who was following behind Walsh and Bolliston. Janet hurried to the other side of Warren and lifted his arm, draping it over her shoulder.
"Are you sure?"
Verna whispered to Walsh.
"Here? Nathan wanted us to meet him in the Hagen Woods?"
"Yes,"
Walsh said over his shoulder.
"That was the name he told me, too," Clarissa added.
Verna let out an annoyed breath. It was just like Nathan to make them go into the Hagen Woods. Even if Richard had cleared the Mriswith from this place, she still didn't like it. Verna always suspected Nathan of being dangerously unbalanced, and that he would want her to meet him here only confirmed it. Trailers of moss hung down like gauzy rags of the dead. Roots tripped their feet as they moved through the darkness. Unpleasant odors wafted in on the warm, humid air. Verna had never been this deep into the Hagen Woods before, and for good reason.
"How are you doing, Warren?"
she whispered.
"Fine,"
he mumbled in a groggy voice.
"It won't be long, Warren. It won't be long now. Just a little farther, and then it will be over. Nathan will help you."
"Nathan,"
he mumbled under his breath.
"Must warn him."
They came upon a massive stone block that was obviously worked by man. It was square. It was nearly covered with snaking tendrils and gnarled roots. More stones, like white bones in the moonlight, jutted up from the thick vegetation. She saw the low, jagged remains of a wall and columns looking like the ribs of a monster. Light shone through the undergrowth. The way it flickered, it appeared to be the light of a campfire. Walsh and Bolliston held aside the branches for the rest of them. The fire was set in a circle of rocks placed on the stone floor of old ruins. Beyond the fire, Verna could see the round wall of a large well, or something like a well. She had never known that this place was hidden in the Hagen Woods, but as infrequently as anyone went into the Hagen Woods, that wasn't surprising. Nathan, dressed like a rich nobleman, rose to greet them. He was tall and intimidating, especially without a Radahan around his neck. When he saw them all, he grinned that confident, raw grin. Walsh and Bolliston laughed aloud and received good-natured slaps on the back. Clarissa ducked under an arm, throwing hers around Nathan's midsection. He grunted when she squeezed with all her might and ardor. When she proudly held out the book, he took it from her. He gave her a private smile, laden with meaning. Clarissa's eyes sparkled. Verna's eyes rolled.
"Verna!" Nathan called out when he saw her. "Glad you could make it."
"How good to see you, Lord Rawl."
"You shouldn't scowl like that, Verna. You'll get wrinkles."
He scanned the others. "Janet, so you have joined us too." His brow tightened a bit.
"And Amelia."
He looked to the other woman standing off to the side.
"And who have we here?"
Clarissa held out an arm, wiggling her fingers, urging Manda forward. From underneath, Manda's fists tightened the cloak at her throat. She timidly stepped forward.
"Nathan, this is a friend of mine, Manda, from Renwald."
Manda put a knee to the ground as she bowed deeply.
"Lord Rawl, my life is yours."
"Renwald."
Nathan's brow twitched again as he glanced briefly at Clarissa.
"Yes. Well, glad you escaped from Jagang, Manda."
"I owe it all to Clarissa," Manda said as she came to her feet. "She is the bravest woman I've ever seen."
Clarissa giggled as she pressed herself to Nathan.
"Nonsense. I'm so thankful that the good spirits put you where they did, or I'd never have even known you were there."
Nathan turned his attention back toward Verna.
"Who have we here? The young Warren, I presume?"
Verna did her best to smooth her own brow.
"Nathan."
"Lord Rawl."
His grin cracked through the scowl.
"But we are old friends, Verna. I am still Nathan to you, and all my old friends."
Verna dipped her head as she bit the inside of her cheek.
"Nathan," she began again, "you're right, this is Warren. Can you help him? He's just coming into prophecy, just starting to have them. I took his collar off a while back, and there is nothing to protect him from the gift. He's having the headaches. Nathan, he's in a bad way. I'll follow you anywhere if you will help him."
"Help him?
Please, Nathan, I'm begging you."
"Nothing to it, Verna. I'd be delighted to help the boy."
Nathan gestured.
"Bring him over here by the fire."
Warren mumbled, trying to introduce himself, but he was nearly unconscious. Verna and Janet helped him down where Nathan pointed and balanced him upright. Nathan hiked up his trousers at his knees and lowered himself to the stone floor of the missing building, sitting cross-legged. He set the book beside him. His brow drew down in that Rawl frown as he studied Warren's face. He waved his hand at Verna and Janet, ordering them away. With a web, Nathan held Warren upright. He inched forward until their knees touched.
"Warren!"
Nathan called in that deep, commanding voice of his. Warren's eyes opened.
"Hold up your hands!"
Fingers extended, both Warren and Nathan held up their hands. They pressed their fingers together, their eyes fixed on each other.
"Let your hand flow into my fingertips," Nathan said in gentle prompting.
"Open the seventh gateway. Close the others. You know of what I speak?"
"Yes."
"That's a good lad.
Do it then. It will make it easier if I have your help."
A warm, mellow glow enveloped both men. The night air hummed with the power from that light. It was neither flame nor heat. Verna didn't know what Nathan was doing. She was somewhat astounded that Nathan did. Nathan had always been something of an enigma at the Palace of the Prophets. He had seemed an old man to her even when Verna was a young girl. He had always been regarded as, at the least, unbalanced, even by the most magnanimous of the sisters. There were those at the palace who didn't believe that Nathan had more than the slightest hint of the gift in anything but prophecy. Others suspected, but were never sure, that he was capable of much more than he ever showed them. There were others who were so terrified of him that they feared going to the rooms where he was confined, even though he had a Rada Han around his neck. Verna had always considered Nathan trouble on two feet. Now she watched as this troublesome old lecher of a wizard did his best to save the life of the man Verna loved. At times, the light glowed more strongly in one man than the other, before passing away and then coming back, as if it had forgotten something and then returned for it. Walsh and Bullesden loafed near the round stone wall behind Nathan, but the rest of the party watched transfixed. Verna had no more idea what Nathan was doing than did Manda. What unnerved Verna the most was when both men, their knees touching, their fingers pressed together, floated a few inches off the ground. She was relieved when they at last settled back down. Nathan clapped his hands together once.
"There!"
he announced.
"Ah, that should do it."
Verna couldn't see how that could have possibly been enough to set the gift right in Warren. Warren, though, wore a wide grin.
"Nathan, that was marvelous. The headache is completely gone. I feel so clear-headed, so alive."
Nathan picked up the inky book and stood.
"I enjoyed it too, my boy. Took that gaggle of sisters near to 300 years to do for me what I have just done for you. But then they were a misguided lot."
He glanced Verna's way.
Sorry, prelate. No slight intended. None taken."
Verna rushed to Warren's side.
"Thank you, Nathan. I was so worried for him. You have no idea what a relief this is."
Warren's face was losing the joyous look.
"Nathan, now that you have done this for me, I can see more clearly that we have inadvertently given Jagang insight into prophecy that..."
Nathan cried out. Clarissa cried out. Verna froze. She could feel something sharp pressed to her back. Amelia had a dakra stabbed in the back of Nathan's thigh. Manda had a knife at Clarissa's throat. Janet was holding a weapon at Verna's back. Warren stiffened when Janet held a warning finger to him and then to the two soldiers.
"Don't you move a muscle, Nathan," Amelia said, "or I let Flo my hand and you are instantly dead."
"Warren is right," Janet said. "He did, in fact, give His Excellency some very valuable information."
"Amelia! Janet!" Verna cried out. "What are you doing?"
Amelia turned a wicked smile on Verna.
"His Excellency's bidding, of course." "But you swore the oath."
"We swore the oath in word only, not in our hearts."
"But you can be free of him. You don't need to serve Jagang."
"Had you told us true the first time, maybe. But once we tried and failed to hold the bond when Richard died, His Excellency punished us. We'll not take the chance again."
"Don't do this," Verna pleaded. "We're friends. I came to save you. Don't do this, please. Swear the bond and you will be free."
"Oh, darling, I'm afraid she can't do that."
It was not Amelia's voice alone, but more. It was the voice Verna had heard in her own head. Jagang. She felt herself suddenly trembling just at hearing his tone and inflection in Amelia's voice.
"Now, my loyal and faithful plenipotentiary, hand over the book. Sister Amelia and I have more use of it."
Nathan held it out to the side. With her other hand, the one not on the dakra in his leg, Amelia snatched back the book.
"Well," Nathan said, "are you going to kill me or not?"
"Oh, yes, I intend to kill you,"
Amelia said in Jagang's voice.
"You betrayed our bargain, Lord Rawl. Besides, I don't like having subordinates who won't allow me into their minds. Before you die, I thought I'd let you watch how a real slave obeys orders. I thought you'd like to watch me cut your little darling Clarissa's throat."
"Breathe."
Colin expelled the sliff from her lungs and with frantic need sucked in the alien air. Night crashed in around her. She refused to spare the time to fear the sudden vision, the sudden sound, to give it time to settle into place in her mind, and instead seized the stone wall to hoist herself out. A frightening sight, to match the word she had already heard, greeted her. With her vision enhanced by the sliff, she took in the whole scene at once in one slamming jolt. The instant she saw him, Colin knew this was Nathan. He looked like a Rawl, and Richard had told her about Nathan. Tall, older, with long white hair to his shoulders. A woman had stabbed a dakra into his leg and was holding it there. Colin had heard her name, Amelia, the one who had started the plague. Colin saw Verna with a woman at her back. A young man stood frozen. Colin saw a beautiful young woman holding another woman by a fistful of hair done in ringlets. It could only be Clarissa. The woman's other fist held a knife at the terrified Clarissa's throat. As Colin had emerged from the slough, she was conscious of the last part of the conversation that had just taken place, and knew well the voice coming from the woman holding the dakra in Nathan's leg. Colin knew well the word, "Darling." She remembered hearing that voice from the wizard Marlin who had come to assassinate Richard. It was Jagang's voice. The image of the amulet Richard wore came unbidden into Colin's mind.
"It means only one thing and everything. Cut. Once committed to fight, cut. Everything else is secondary. Cut."
Her training at the hands of her warrior father had been much the same. Kill or be killed. Never yield, never wait. Attack. Richard was near death, near his last breath. She had no time to spare, no time to consider. She was committed. Cut. In one fluid movement, she erupted from the slough, dived out of the well, yanked a short sword free of the scabbard on the soldier standing right there, ducked her head, tumbled forward, and came up with the sword already whipping down. In the span of a heartbeat, before anyone had time to flinch, Colin was there. She had to stop Amelia before she released her magic into the dakra in Nathan's leg, or he would be dead. Like lightning, her sword descended, severing Sister Amelia's arm at the crook of her elbow. And then everything moved in a painfully slow dance. Colin could see the expression on every face. The woman Colin had just cut, Sister Amelia, was falling back with a cry. Already, Colin's sword was whirling to reverse her handhold as she followed her quarry down. Verna was spinning, a dakra in her own hand, toward a surprised woman behind her. The young man was diving toward the woman with the knife. Nathan's hands were coming up toward Clarissa. His scream cut through the night. Clarissa was reaching toward Nathan. The young woman holding her by the hair snarled with a vicious sneer and savagely cut through Clarissa's throat. Colin saw the spray of blood for only an instant before the night exploded with lightning from both Nathan and the young man. Her left hand now joined with her right, Colin slammed her sword down through Sister Amelia's heart, pinning her to the ground before the second soldier had his sword clear of his scabbard. Verna's dakra expeditiously dispatched the woman behind her at the same time as the young woman with the knife took two bolts of lightning, shattering her in a red horror as Clarissa's body still collapsed toward the ground. The violence was over before comprehension could catch up with it. In a daze, Nathan staggered toward Clarissa's body. Colin rushed past him and knelt beside Clarissa. The sight that greeted her brought a gasp. Colin sprang up and put her hands against Nathan, stopping him.
"It's too late, Nathan. She's with the spirits now. Don't look. Please, don't look. I saw in her eyes the love she had for you. Please, don't look at her like this. Remember her the way she was."
Nathan nodded.
"She had a good heart. She saved so many people. She had a good heart."
Nathan lifted his arms. He held his palms out toward Clarissa's body. Intense light flared forth, flooding the dead woman with a brilliant blaze so radiant that the body couldn't be seen at its center.
"From the light of this fire and into the light, safe journey to the spirit world," Nathan whispered.
When the light was gone, only ash remained. Nathan slumped. "The vultures can have the rest of them." Verna tucked her dakra back up her sleeve. One soldier retrieved his sword from Amelia's body as the other sheathed his. The young man looked in shock.
"Nathan, I'm so sorry. I gave Jagang the meaning of prophecy that helped him. I didn't want to, but he made me. I'm so sorry."
Nathan's doleful azure eyes turned toward the young man.
"I understand, Warren. You didn't do it out of malice. The dreamwalker was in your mind, and you had no choice. You are free of him now."
Nathan yanked the dakra from his leg. He turned to Verna.
"You brought traitors to me, Verna. You brought assassins to me. But I realize you had not intended it. Sometimes prophecy overwhelms our attempts to outwit it and catches us unaware. Sometimes we think we are more clever than we are, and that we can stay the hand of fate if we wish it hard enough.
Verna straightened her cloak on her shoulders.
I thought I was saving them from Jigang. I never had any idea that they would give the oath to you without committing their hearts.
I understand,
Nathan whispered.
I don't know what goes through that head of yours, Nathan. Lord Rawl, indeed.
Verna glanced to where Clarissa's body had been, and where now there was only white ash.
And I see that you haven't changed your ways, Nathan. Once again, you've gotten another of your little whores killed.
The impact of Nathan's fist lifted Verna clear off the ground. Her jawbone shattered with a loud crack. Strings of blood sailed out into the night air. Warren cried out as Verna landed flat on her back. She didn't move. Warren, crouched at Verna's side, looked up with frantic eyes.
Nathan! Dear Creator, why would you do this? You've broken her jaw. Why would you try to kill her?
Nathan flexed his fist. If I was trying to kill her, she would be dead. If you want her to live, then I would suggest you heal her. I've heard that you are talented at healing, and with what I have done for you tonight, you should be able to accomplish it in short order. Put some sense in her head while you're at it. Warren bent over Verna, pressing his hands to the unconscious woman's face. Colin said nothing. She had seen love in Nathan's eyes when he had looked at Clarissa. She had just seen rage, too. Nathan bent and retrieved the inky black book lying on the ground beside Sister Amelia's body. He straightened and turned those raw eyes on Colin. He held out the book.
You could be none other than Colin. I've been expecting you. Prophecy, you know. I'm glad I was not late.
You don't have much time. Give this to Lord Rawl. I hope he knows how to destroy it.
He knew when he was at the Temple of the Winds, but he said he had to give up his knowledge to leave. But he wrote a message in the palms of his hands. It says, pinch of white sorcerer's sand on third page, one grain of black sorcerer's sand tossed on. And then there were three words, but I don't know what they mean.
Nathan laid a big hand on her shoulder. The words are the three chimes, Richani, Centrosi, Vasi. I don't have time to teach you about the three chimes, but know that they must be spoken after the white and before the black. That's what is important.
Richani, Centrosi, Vasi,
Colin repeated, trying to commit the words to memory. She said them over again in her head. Richard does have both white and black sorcerer's sand, does he not?
Colin nodded. Yes, he told me about it. He has both.
Nathan shook his head as if considering some private thought.
Both,
he muttered. Nathan squeezed her shoulder.
I know from prophecy some of what he has been through. Stand by him. Love is too precious a gift to lose.
Colin smiled.
I understand. May the good spirits bring it to your heart, Nathan. I can't thank you enough for helping Richard, for helping me.
Her voice broke.
I didn't know what I was going to do. I only knew I had to come here.
Nathan hugged her. She thought more for his own need than hers.
You did the right thing. Maybe the good spirits guided you.
Get back to him now, or we will lose our Lord Rawl. Colin nodded.
The killing is over.
The killing is just about to begin. Nathan turned and held both fists skyward. An awesome flare of light ignited at his fists and shot into the night sky. Colin watched as it streaked northwest, so bright that the stars vanished in the glare. Colin saw Verna sitting up, with Warren's help. He was wiping the blood away from her newly healed jaw.
What have you done?
Colin asked Nathan. He looked down at her a long moment, and then a sly smile spread on his lips.
I have just given Jigang a nasty surprise. I have just given General Rybish the signal to attack. Attack? Attack who?
Jigang's expeditionary force. They destroyed Renwald. They are up to other trouble in the New World, too, but are unaware of who shadows them. It will be a short battle. The prophecy says that the Daharans will fight as fiercely as they have ever fought, and will, before this night is over, destroy the enemy in the traditional Daharan fashion.
without mercy.
Verna was coming to her feet. Colin had never seen Verna looking so meek.
Nathan, I beg your forgiveness.
I'm not interested.
Colin laid a hand on Nathan's arm and whispered up at him.
Nathan, please, for your own sake, listen to her.
Nathan gazed into Colin's eyes a moment before he turned his glare on Verna.
I'm listening.
Nathan, I've known you a long time. My whole life. I've seen things before that... perhaps I didn't understand. I thought you were doing this to seize power for yourself. Please, forgive me for lashing out at you for my own guilt at my friends turning against me. Against us. I sometimes jump to judgment. I can see that I have mistaken what was truly going on with you and Clarissa. She adored you, and I thought... I beg you to forgive me, Nathan.
Nathan let out a grunt.
Knowing you, Verna, that must have been the hardest thing you have ever had to say.
Forgiveness granted.
Thank you, Nathan,
she sighed. Nathan bent and kissed Colin's cheek.
May the good spirits be with you, Mother Confessor. Tell Richard I give him back his title. Maybe I will see him again some day.
With his hands on her waist, he boosted Colin up onto the sliff's wall.
Thank you, Nathan. I can see why Richard liked you. Clarissa, too. I think she saw the real Nathan.
Nathan smiled, but then turned serious. When you get back, you must offer Richard's brother what he truly wants if you are to save Richard.
You wish to travel?
The sliff asked. Colin's stomach roiled.
Yes, back to Aidenville.
Is Richard truly alive?
Verna asked.
Yes,
Colin said with revived panic.
He's sick, but he will be fine once I get this book back to him and it's destroyed.
Walsh, Bolesden,
Nathan gestured as he started away.
My coach awaits. Let's be off.
But Nathan,
Warren said,
I want to learn about prophecy. I would like to study with you.
A true prophet is born, Warren, not made.
Where are you going?
Verna called after him.
You can't leave. You're a prophet. You can't be left to run. I mean, we must know where you will be in case we need you.
Without looking back, Nathan pointed.
Your sisters are that way, prelate, to the northwest. Go to them and save yourself the trouble of trying to follow me. You won't succeed. Your sisters are safe from the Dreamwalker. I had them transfer their bond to me while Richard went to the world of the dead. If Richard lives, you all can transfer it back to him. Goodbye, Verna.
Warren.
Colin pressed a fist to her stomach.
If he lives? If? Hurry,
she said to the sliff.
Hurry!
A silver arm swept her from the wall and down into the quicksilver froth. Chapter 66. He smiled at the way she struggled. He liked the way she had fought him. He enjoyed teaching her how useless it was to fight a person of his superior strength, superior intellect. He watched in fascination as blood ran from her mouth and nose. The gash on her jaw oozed.
You are only succeeding at making your wrists bleed, he taunted. You can't break the ropes, but keep at it if you wish.
She spat at him. He smacked her again. He dug his thumb across the cut on her jaw, spellbound by the pattern of blood flooding down the side of her neck. He knew her auras. He'd felt them before. He knew just which ones to touch to cripple her. It hadn't taken long to overpower her. Not long at all. Her teeth gritted as she growled with effort, straining against the ropes. She was strong, but she was not strong enough. Without her power and her weapon, she was a mere woman. No mere woman was a match for him, not in any way. When his fingers began unbuttoning the row of buttons along the side of her ribs, she tugged violently at the ropes holding her wrists and ankles. He liked that. He liked to watch her struggle, to watch her bleed. He punched her face again. He was intrigued that she didn't cry out, that she didn't beg for mercy, that she didn't scream.
She would.
Oh, how she would scream. His punch had stunned her for the moment. Her eyes rolled as she fought to remain conscious. He threw back the front of her outfit, exposing her breasts and the upper half of her torso. He hooked his fingers under the tight waist of her red leather pants and, with a quick pull, yanked them down enough for what he was going to do to her. Her entire belly was exposed. He felt it. Tight. Hard. There were scars on her. They riveted him. He tried to imagine what had caused such scars. As jagged and white as they were, it would have been bloody.
"I've been raped before," she sneered, "more times than I can remember. I can tell you from experience that you're not very good at it. You haven't even gotten my pants down enough, you stupid pig. Get on with it, if you even can. I'm waiting."
"Oh, Kara, I'm not going to rape you. That would be wrong. I have never raped a woman. I only have women who want it." She laughed at him. Laughed.
"You are one twisted bastard."
He resisted his urge to smash her face. He wanted her awake for this. Alive for this. But he shook with rage.
"Bastard!" His fist tightened. "Because of women like you."
He hammered a fist down on her breast. Her eyes squeezed shut and her teeth clenched as she winced in pain, trying to curl up in a ball, but unable to, stretched out in the ropes as she was. He took a settling breath, regaining his control. He wouldn't let her divert him with her filthy mouth.
"Now, I'm going to give you one last chance. Where is Richard? The soldiers are going wild with talk of Richard being back, of the bond being back. Where are you whores hiding him?"
This is the end of side one. There is no need to change your balance control. Simply reverse this cassette. That is, turn to side two and continue listening.